Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And I want to make sure I plug, because I just did this yesterday, and I've asked Sean to remind me if I failed to mention that we need to be sending money and support, financial support, to Jerry Wistrand and his campaign for auditor at the state level in Missouri. The information for his campaign is on the candidate endorsement page on Reclaiming the Republic. Candidate endorsement pages. Go down, find the little button that says candidate endorsement, click on the button, and you'll find his campaign right there. So, I have to state, because it's so important to get behind full compliance of the Constitution and understanding the Constitution in context to how the states understood it. Now, I've read through these documents quite a bit. And I'm here to tell you that even though I've read through them quite a bit, there are these epiphanies, or I should say, there's new light that has shined just due to the fact that we're dealing with things and we've been struggling with stuff. And it's like I get something new, and several times going through the convention this past year, there's things that just jumped out. Some of the things we actually read for the first time, but some of the stuff that we've actually read before, like the reference to the Articles of Confederation and the specific treaty where they literally laid out the 3/5 rule, where the convention didn't create that rule, and that was a huge eye-opener, at least for me. And so, but these are nuances. I'm going to tell you, folks, when you read these things for the first time, you're going to get a lot out of it. You're actually reading the truth for the very first time. But when you go back and read, you're going to find nuances that you go, wow, I didn't realize this. And as Sean kind of alluded to right before we started, it was just like the scriptures, just like the scriptures. Amen. This is why there is no more important radio program on the airwaves today. Everybody, can read their versions of the Bibles and so forth and work your salvation, but there's no more important radio show today in helping you understand the context of how to deal with the tyranny of government we're living under today and how to fight and get it back. This is the only show that's doing this. This is why I forego. And as a matter of fact, I think, I don't have the talent to be that entertaining. And I guess because I'm so apathetic, that might be entertaining in itself when it comes to my apathy towards, caring for being entertained. I do like to joke. And, I say jokes all the time, and it just drives my wife crazy. She just, she married me. And it's something that she has to, it's her burden to carry. But she constantly says, hey, GR, you think you're funny, but you're really not. Just give it up. And she says, one of these days, you're going to make a joke and somebody's going to take such offense, they're going to kill you. Because, sometimes she really thinks my jokes are that bad. So anyway, welcome back, Tammy, and welcome back, Sean.
Good to be here, sir.
And so what we need to do, Tammy, since you missed yesterday, and that's just because your schedule is what it is, but I know that you like getting this stuff, and I think this is so important that we need to cover this, that we want to do a go-back. I think we need to do a go-back to highlight this, because I've actually highlighted the Maryland debates, now not Sean's copy and probably not Tammy's copy. Actually, I think it just did email it out. But the two amendments that Maryland was seeking, they're the first state out in a mechanical they're the first state alphabetically that we've hit that was a rubber stamp state that sent in amendment recommendations. Now, when we look at when all of these other states convened, they convened too early to see the benefit of what Massachusetts put in motion. All of the, most of the big states that ratified, Pennsylvania was the first, and technically, I've said this before, Pennsylvania was the one that actually put in recommended amendments in their debates. Massachusetts did it, and for some reason, everybody, you know, made a big deal about Massachusetts doing it. And to me, it seemed like, you know, I think, you know, most people, you know, with the thinking alike, like thinking people, they're going to do the same things, and voila, I mean, everybody kind of goes, yeah, that's a no-brainer. That's what we should have been doing. That's what we'll do. And as a matter of fact, in the beginning of most of the debates, they even talk about, you know, before they started the ratification, they said, well, instead of ratifying, let's just send amendments. Okay, what about ratifying on the contingency of amendments? They literally went through the debates in that way to determine what they had to do, and it came down that all of the states had to ratify. They had to ratify. So Massachusetts, and when we get to Massachusetts, it was John Hancock that basically says, look, we need to ratify this, but we need to ratify it by without stipulating that these amendments have to be had, that we're strongly requesting these amendments be considered to amend to the Constitution. And that right there got Samuel Adams, I'm going to say this again when we get into Massachusetts in that point. It convinced Samuel Adams that that was the right thing to do because he was not going to vote in favor or ratify the Constitution. But when John Hancock says, let's ratify it and let's give them the opportunity because we believe that everybody, you know, these are good people still, and that they will see the need for these amendments. And Samuel Adams goes, the providence, the wisdom that has come from you, your great excellence. I mean, it was just like, you know, it was almost like he was playing the cast of a sycophant, and everybody looks at Samuel Adams as truly a leader. But this, they had these boundaries of respect that you always just gave laud and praise to whomever was the president of the convention or what have you. And had it been him, I'm sure John Hancock would have said the same thing back to him. So anyway, the point is that this was a real pivoting point that actually got Massachusetts across the finish line, where Samuel Adams openly said that he was going to vote against this, and now that he's recommending that this is what we do, now he sees the light that, yes, I will ratify this Constitution. Boom. That changed a lot of people, because he had that kind of influence. Both of those men had that kind of influence to where it really did change the hearts and minds of the people of Massachusetts. So back to the Maryland debates. Now, Sean, you read these before, and I think that it'd probably be easier because if we the two amendments we want to read. Now, I know that there's one that kind of stands out, the Seventh Amendment, where they talk about the regulation of commerce and so forth. That's something that's, yeah, they wanted to clarify the Commerce Clause. But the two that are really critical that we want to get Tammy up to speed with is the 14th Amendment, first off, because this is right here addressing clarity what the First Amendment lost in brevity. And so let me do this because I want to read the Constitution. As a matter of fact, I think I'm sharing it. So I've got the First Amendment right here. And the First Amendment basically says that the abridging the freedom of the speech or of the press or the right of the people, in other words, there should be no abridging. The Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of the press, speech, or right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for the redress of grievances. That right there was done to kind of consolidate and briefly, or in the art of being succinct and brief, they didn't provide the details when they said petition the government for the redress of grievances. So this will jump out when you hear what they actually wrote as that whole point of the right of petitioning. So, Sean, go ahead and read the 14th Amendment again. In the Maryland 14th Amendment. That's what I meant.
Oh, okay. You'll be dead. Number 14, that every man hath the right to petition the legislature for the redress of grievances in a peaceable and orderly manner.
Okay. In other words, when you're petitioning government, you shouldn't be going up with guns blazing and so forth. They were all civilly minded. You know, you gave everybody due respect. You treated people with respect. And so the key point is, you see the difference in the language?
I'm looking.
So the key difference is in the First Amendment. The First Amendment says the right of the people to petition their government for the redress of grievances. What the 14th Amendment in the Maryland ratification debate states is that every man hath the right to petition the legislature. That is the government of a Republican form of government. Was Congress wrong or Madison wrong in basically stating the right to petition government for the redress of grievances? No, because in a Republican form of government, the sovereign body is the legislature. And we kind of covered this. Right. We covered this in the ratification debates, how they literally identify that the legislatures are the sovereigns. This next amendment even highlights even more so the importance of the legislature and adds the executive. So let's go ahead with the 15th Amendment and just read the first sentence, you know, accountable for their conduct. Just read that first part.
That it be declared that all persons entrusted with the legislative or executive powers of government are the trustees and servants of the public, and as such, accountable for their conduct.
Okay, and they know that they're accountable because they're under oath, so they're accountable for their conduct. But do you notice how one branch is not listed in this?
Yeah, the judicial is not in there.
Yeah, judicial.
Right. In other words, they, as a paradigm, they didn't see the judiciary as a vestige of power. It was a perfunctory service in providing justice between two parties over a controversy. They weren't to create laws. They weren't to invoke and force, you know, this uniformity of laws and to create this elaborate legal system that we have today. There was no power vested in them, so they didn't even mention it.
In other words, supposed to be arbitrators or mediators.
Well, the federal government, are to be basically like umpires. That's the federal government's job, and that really, when it comes down to it, the umpire is the court, because they're the ones to just make sure. Right, yes, correct. But the fact that they didn't mention the court just shows that the court really has no power. How does the executive have power in a form of sovereignty? Most people miss this. But I covered this in Why Counties Matter Most. See, the legislature, and when the framers looked at sovereignty, the two biggest things that clearly indicate who the sovereign is who has the power to create the laws and who has the power to tax. And that's the legislature. So they possess these positive and negative. They can make laws and they can get rid of laws. They can tax you and they can reduce the tax. They can increase tax, reduce tax. Altogether, holiday tax, whatever. But the point is that the legislature is the true sovereign in our three branches of government. But they listed the executive. Because guess what? The executive actually has some legislative power. What is that legislative power that the president has?
Veto.
It's a negative power, not a positive. He can't create law, but he can veto a law. But the legislature, being so sovereign, has the ability to overpower his veto, overcome the veto, and make the law legitimate. Now, I've said this, and I believe that this is a legitimate amendment that is not being brought up. Not being brought up by any of the convention state folks. That the president should be able to clearly articulate how a given law is a direct violation of the Constitution, and ergo it gets expunged, or it does, it cannot go into law. In other words, taking away Congress's ability to overpower that form of veto. The only reason they didn't put it in was they said, of course, Congress won't even make a law that will violate the Constitution. And yet, within a few years, they did by creating the bank, by creating the Assumption Act. And the president, went a lot, because they followed the concept of implied powers and the manipulations of Hamilton, and all of these things were detrimental. All detrimental, because not all people understood the Constitution, which is why, folks, you when you really look at who was the real champion, who was the one person that laid out a consistency so that we could truly see where these boundaries truly lied within the Constitution, well, Jefferson was good, but Madison was the best. Madison was the one that clearly put the spotlight in educating the legislature of Virginia. He clearly led, he helped everybody understand, even Congress, with the vetoing of the bonus bills. He actually held the line and basically rode that line. It's not that he was perfect, but doggone it, he was the best in helping us really understand the Constitution out of all the framers, which is, you know, I don't want to sound like, you know, I'm this fanatical, unreasonable, you know, child that is just enamored and, you know, when you see like the Beatles, you know, you see the fanatics in the audience just going crazy, right? I'm not that guy. I'm not that guy. I am, you know, I'm trying to be like, I guess, a Vulcan, you know, using a little bit of entertainment here. Common sense, logic, and reason why I would say that out of all of the framers and out of all of the people that lived in this constitutional republic, the one person that was the stellar, consummate epitome of a man supporting the Constitution as it was defined by the states or defined to the states in the ratification debates was Madison. Nobody else. Hamilton was an enemy of the Constitution. Hamilton had his own designs. And there were enough people that didn't understand that got, you know, I'll just say misled. As a matter of fact, this came up and it's worth sharing, and I'll, and then we'll move on into the next debate, which would be, I think, the New Hampshire debate. We'll just take a glance at that. But the, this came up, for what it's worth, that when we look at the reign, or I should say what Madison did in the state legislature, in attacking Hamilton. Most people, folks, you don't know this, because Hamilton ended up not succeeding in getting Congress to do what they were supposed to do. Of course, that happened twice. Actually, it happened three times, but Madison was okay with the first time it happening. And when Madison, when they got, when they, it's, this kind of goes down this train of thought, that whenever it gets easy to step across the line, the second time it gets easier, and the next time, it's like following somebody in the snow. The first person that goes, you know, through the snow, they bear the majority of the burden or the effort to do that. But it's easier to, you know, follow those tracks, and it gets easier and easier to follow those tracks. And that's how I see the violating the Constitution, like creating a path in the snow. And so, when Hamilton allowed the tracks to be created by not vigorously debating and being a stand firm on not allowing the Assumption Acts to move forward, he should have held that line. And there's no doubt in my mind that's the one thing that probably gets him rolling in his grave. So I don't want to belabor the point. The point is this, is that the Bank Act, and then later on these other things that were being done You know, it just made it easier and easier for them to do these things, which is why when Madison became the president, and actually when Jefferson became the president, they really started holding the line to being more constitutional and not allowing the assumption of powers. They didn't have alien sedition acts that were coming out. As a matter of fact, when you really look at what they did, so when Madison was holding Hamilton accountable in 1793, for a long time they were going through, people looked at it like a witch hunt. Madison provided all sorts of evidence and data, and what he needed was Congress to do their job in convicting Hamilton for his crimes. But instead, they chose to give Hamilton a pass and not convict him. So some people look at that as the biggest failure of Madison. Actually, it wasn't a failure of Madison. Madison could not vote for every person in Congress. So who was the fault? Was it these Congress members? Or was it the states not actually stepping in the beginning with the Assumption Act, saying, you should never have done that. You know, you voted for it, you're out. But instead, everybody just let the status quo move forward. And even though, at this point, they weren't chemtrailing, they weren't, you know, manipulating our food, they weren't outright killing us in America from coming out of Congress. They were just doing these little things. Most people said, well, what's the harm? Or anybody that just allowed it to happen, I'm just going, why? Why? Well, what's the harm? Look at where we are today. And Hamilton and even Jefferson talked about the dangers of allowing these types of breaches to happen. But anyway, so let's read the last part of this, because this right here is something I emphasize several times in why counties matter most. Go ahead and read that last part of that paragraph. Wherefore, whenever the end, go ahead.
You want me to read it?
Yeah, you were reading it. That's fine. Because if you read it, then Tammy can focus on what you're saying and what she's reading.
Right.
Right, okay.
Wherefore, whenever the ends of government are perverted and the public liberty manifestly endangered and all other means of redress are ineffectual, the people may and of right ought to reform the old or establish a new government. The doctrine of non-resistance against arbitrary power and oppression is absurd, slavish, and destructive of the good and happiness of mankind.
Yeah, and you know, this is a little shot at the libertarian, passivity, you know, clause not to be violent or what have you. I mean, the necessity of removing with whatever force necessary. Because you've got to do it to the first people. We talked about this yesterday, about how we enable people's bad behavior by, you know, not holding them accountable. And as a matter of fact, when behavior gets so enabled that it requires brute force, then it requires brute force. Going in with, you know, with threat of violence, with threat of death, using arms with deadly force capabilities. I think in some ways the libertarians want to mollycoddle everybody. They thought, oh, well, shame on you. No. That right there is the whole reason why the generations today are so screwed up, because the silent generation kind of mollycoddled the baby boomers in their insurrectionist actions of basically protesting government. And what we call the cultural war that we executed, the baby boomers executed. And we only enabled more bad behavior from the baby boomers through, you know, all these rest of the generations that we've got to today. At what point are we going to stop mollycoddling our future citizens and get them to understand there's a line to be held and we must hold the line? Now, we're going into break. So when we come back, then what we're going to do is we're going to go into the next ratification debate, which, again, after Maryland will be, let me see here, New Hampshire. So we'll dive into New Hampshire next and go through those amendments that they have. So we need to go through these amendments. And then we have a very special course on the menu for you once we get through these small debates. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so actually getting back to you, Tammy, that last line of being able to abolish and or the requirement of holding government accountable, I mean, it just jumps out that we it's this inalienable right. And any good citizen will hold their people accountable to their government. If their government no longer is serving them or meeting their needs, then they have to. And what is our government? Because this is what we talked about the day before. Our government isn't the buildings. It isn't the land. It isn't even the seats in these rooms where the president sits in the Oval Office, you know, and where the Congress sits. It's not the rooms. It's not the chairs. It's the people that occupy them. The chairs are not under oath. Mm-hmm. It is the people that is our government. And if we don't hold them accountable, nobody will. And what they'll end up doing, and this is what I'm putting in my latest article, is that they enable themselves to create a den of thieves. When most people look at our party system and our party form of government as one of the factions or one of the small, you know, portions of our government being party informed, we're not Republican informed at all. We're more judiciary informed, and we're party informed, because the party itself, the party itself is the one that controls access to who actually gets in. And there are two parts or two bodies of the party, and they are autonomous. There is the actual party that everybody understands and says, okay, here are the bylaws, here's your platform, this is what the party means. That right there is one body of the party. The other body is the body that does the damage. This is the people that get elected that are wearing the brand of the party, and they go in and there is no accountability to the party. In other words, they're fully autonomous, and they have been given the powers of political theatrics. In other words, politicians with the powers of political theatrics can go in and they can start concocting schemes, stratagems, and all sorts of evil things to create laws and to subjugate us, because we're not holding them accountable and the party can't hold them accountable. Even if we get the party to a point, we're going to prove with Wyoming that Wyoming can't actually go and get these guys removed. It's going to require the people to shift their loyalty back to actually the grassroots and demanding and start going down the path of only electing people like Jerry Winstrand, people that are committed to fully enforcing and living in full compliance to the constitutions. If there's a power that's being exercised that shouldn't exist, boom. If there's a bill that comes onto the floor of the legislative body, whether it be Congress or the state, you stand up and say, that bill is not within the enumerated powers. We cannot create a law regarding that. It needs to be removed, and whoever sponsored that should be chastised. and given a first and final, you bring another law to the floor for us to review and engage in that is not within our purview, not within our enumerated powers, you will be removed by trying to subvert our government. Wow. Do you understand when we start holding people accountable and people start embracing this idea, we completely dissolve the den of thieves. We completely dissolve the corruption. Well, as long as they keep looking over their back and they see we the people watching them, and where does that all start? It all starts at the county. Because if we're diligent in watching our county, we're basically holding them accountable to hold that state accountable, because the county's holding the state accountable. And then the state government is holding the federal. If we're actually doing our job at the bottom level using the county legislators, we're going to get it done. We're going to get it done, folks. And I know that this just seems hard to connect the dots. It's not complicated. It's just that we've become so illiterate and so ignorant regarding these processes and regarding the power we possess. In our Republican form of government, we possess all the power in holding them accountable. So anyway, so let's open up what we have is the New Hampshire ratification debates. And let me see here. They basically met, and actually this is when they closed out. So June 21st is when it was ratified. They actually met, I believe, on the 14th of June, and they convened on the 21st in ratifying. And what they ended up doing, because they said, you know what, let's just submit these recommendations. So they created a list of amendments. And so it starts off on the first page with first, that it be explicitly declared, right? So in other words, the first thing that they're asking for is what? And Tammy, you go ahead and read this. You got it up? You got it? You got it ready?
I do.
Okay. So read that first amendment that they're recommending.
First, that it explicitly declared that all powers not expressly and particularly delegated by the aforesaid Constitution are reserved to the several states to be by them exercised.
Okay. So what amendment, is there an amendment that was made and attached to the Constitution that basically said that? My head is going up and down. Yes. That's the 10th Amendment.
Okay.
That's the 10th Amendment. So when we look at the 10th Amendment, the 10th Amendment in kind states very similar. Tell me if it differs. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. So they got a little bit more specific, and but still more concise. If you look at what they said in the 10th Amendment, well, you know, they actually expanded it to, if it's not to expand it to the state, then it's reserved to the people, respectively. Because if the people don't empower their state with those powers, the state can't assume them. Because the states have constitutions, too. And this is where Madison, and folks, if you can keep remembering, governments get their authority from their constitutions. Every government in this hybrid constitutional republic must have a constitution where the people delegate the power that they want that government to govern them by. And the federal government, as long as it's not in contrast to the supreme law of the land or the U.S. Constitution, the federal government and the state government can't intervene in saying you can't govern yourself in that capacity. In other words, let's say you wanted to have health care in your county and you had the money and everything else to basically create a health care system. As long as you gave everybody their freedom and rights and so forth, then, you know, you could get away with some level of, and as a matter of fact, it wouldn't have to be necessarily full-fledged or even socialism. It can be community service or what have you. But nevertheless, the point is that if the state doesn't have that power, and the federal government we know doesn't have that power, we will find that the states don't have that power for health care. They don't have the power. That you can actually give it to the counties if you want them to have it. If not, then you reserve it to yourselves, which means that they need to provide and ensure that you have a free open market to basically serve yourself in the community however you see fit. Anyway, so let's go through the next one. What is the Second Amendment, Sean?
Secondly, that there shall be one representative to every 30,000 persons according to the census mentioned in the Constitution until the whole number of representatives amount to 200.
And then, boom. And then they wanted to basically allow that number to slip. And what ended up happening was going through the Constitution, we proved that the very first amendment in the Bill of Rights by Madison was the process of how that number was to change. With 100 members in Congress, it would change to 40,000. And when there were 200 members in Congress, it would change to 50,000 and would cap there. Okay, so Tammy, third.
Thirdly, that Congress do not exercise the powers vested in them by the fourth section of the first article, but in cases when a state shall neglect or refuse to make the regulations therein mentioned, or shall make regulations subversive of the right of the people to a free and equal representation in Congress, nor shall Congress in any case make regulations contrary to a free and equal representation.
All right, so representation is big. And oh, by the way, New Hampshire is the state that has 400 representatives. Not senators, representatives. I think they have 200 senators. Okay, so next one. Sean, fourthly.
Fourthly. That Congress do not lay direct taxes, but when the money arising from imposts, excise, and their other resources are insufficient for the public exigencies, nor then, until Congress shall have first made a requisition upon the states to assess, levy, and pay their respective proportions of such requisitions agreeably to the census fixed in the said Constitution, in such way and manner as the legislature of the state shall think best. And in such case, if any state shall neglect, then Congress may assess and levy such states proportioned together with the interest thereon at the rate of 6% per annum from the time of payment prescribed in such requisition.
And I think that's kind of similar to maybe Massachusetts or some others, but I think the point that is worth bringing up is in the convention, they basically said they can't do this. It's just not reasonable because at the point in time when they need the money to spend the money, they need the money to pay the debt, whatever it is, they can't be going through this, you know, this long drawn out process because there's a lack of trust. They really literally came out and said, hey, you know, why wouldn't they trust us when, you know, should the people trust them? Because they're doing it. You know, they have the ability to make these direct taxes. And therefore, they didn't. It creates a barrier where failure and or other things can come in. And so they, you know, obviously this was not an amendment that was accepted at all. Anyway, okay, so fifthly, Tammy.
That Congress shall erect no company of merchants with exclusive advantages of commerce.
Okay, and we actually came up with that in the notes in the Constitutional Convention, that Congress would not have the power to do that, which is why it was not delegated. So this one right here, this one amendment, would basically be creating a negative that would not be necessary. Just like, you know, Congress can't dictate, you know, the color of clothes that you wear on a given day or dictate, you know, what you do or what you eat. Anyway, so sixthly, Sean.
That no person shall be tried for any crime by which he may incur an infamous punishment or loss of life until he first be indicted by a grand jury, except in such cases as may arise in the government and regulation of the land and naval forces.
Okay, so like under martial law. All right, and so we see that in the Constitution, that made it in, right? And that is what? The Fifth Amendment. The, you know, no person stand an infamous crime without first an indictment of a grand jury. Anyway, seventhly, Tammy.
All common law cases between citizens of different states shall be commenced in the common law courts of the respective states, and no appeal shall be allowed to the federal court in such cases unless the sum or value of the thing in controversy amount to $3,000.
Okay, that's the Seventh Amendment. What is the actual amount?
$20.
$20, that's right. $20, not thousands. They said in any controversy where the controversy is greater than $20, that the right of a trial by jury shall be preserved, and that it cannot be, you know, appealed, you know, to a higher court for anything other than based on law and fact. In other words, they can't introduce new evidence, that type of thing. So, okay. So, eighthly, Sean.
In civil actions between citizens of different states, every issue of fact arising in actions at common law shall be tried by jury if the parties or either of them request it.
Okay, so that right there never got into the Bill of Rights, but the 11th Amendment basically took the need for this away, because the federal court's jurisdiction over any type of case between citizens of different states, civil actions, you know, between citizens of, in other words, you're going, you know, from one citizen of one state to a citizen of another state, that they don't have the authority. That's a state court authority. Ninthly,
Congress shall at no time consent that any person holding an office or trust or profit under the United States shall accept any title of nobility or any other title or office from any king, prince, or foreign state.
Okay, interesting. So, 10th, Sean.
That no standing army shall be kept up in time of peace unless with the consent of 3/4 of the members of each branch of Congress. Nor shall soldiers in time of peace be quartered upon private houses without the consent of the owners.
Okay. And that right there, I believe, is technically, that's like the Third Amendment, technically. So, okay. Tammy, the 11th.
Congress shall make no laws touching religion or to infringe the rights of conscience.
Okay, and 12th, and the last one.
Congress shall never disarm any citizen unless such as are or have been in actual rebellion.
Ah, so they kind of have a caveat there. So, in other words, as a matter of fact, if somebody has actually been in rebellion, what should happen to them? If they're rebelling the Constitution itself and its laws, what should happen to a citizen?
They should be denaturalized.
That's right.
To China.
Well, yeah. Okay, so one step at a time. They have to be, their citizenship needs to be revoked. If they pose that kind of threat, then yes, let's deport them. And, you know, okay, so wherever it's best. But when we look at this actual rebellion, we have to make sure that we strip them of their citizenship. And in so doing, their right to vote goes away, and any of the protections, they're no longer entitled to due process. They can be handled differently in our court system because they don't need due process. We can put them in a speedy court where we can give them some form of justice, but I think we would be making a huge mistake if we didn't give them some form of justice, because the people of America believe people should have at least some form of justice if you're entitled to it. And these people were former citizens. Those people who are here that have no entitlement to, you know, be considered a citizen, are invaders and so forth, boom, they get deported. They have no right of citizenship. They have no right of any privilege and immunity covered under the Constitution. This due process, they don't have the right of due process. Their right is to basically, you know, figure out what they're going to do when we get them to their next, you know, to where they're not going to be here, if I could say it that way. All right, so that pretty much wraps up the New Hampshire debate. Now, there's one final debate that we still need to cover, which is Rhode Island. Now, New Jersey, again, as we look at the different debates, New Jersey actually ratified their debate early. And so there's no point in going through it because they didn't have any amendments. Remember, we kind of went through and this is, okay, all of these states have rubber stamped it. If they're really not offering anything to help, you know, okay, look at their paradigm. Look at how they were viewing government and so forth. Then it's, I just don't think it's a good expenditure of time other than the fact that everybody should have read them at least once. Should read them at least once to know, okay, yeah, they did the administrative task. That's all they did. So the next one, again, is Rhode Island. Now, Rhode Island came up with a lot of different amendments, a lot of them. And so, therefore, let's go through these. And it looks like we've got more amendments than we have time. So we'll probably go a little bit further into this, you know, this topic before we get into the exposure of Hamilton, the Federalist Papers, and the New York ratification base. I'll explain all of that when we hit that, when we get to that point. So anyway, if we look at the very kind of first main paragraph, we now just remember, now there's a lot of misnomers on Rhode Island, and there's misnomers on our framers and so forth. In other words, there's a bunch of people today that are generating shock value crap that we consider history. I think one of the most dumbest things I've heard is the United States created a blockade against Rhode Island. Well, the United States had no ships. They had no navy. They were supposed to form a navy, and there was a Department of Navy, but they had no ships. They had no sailors. They had to start building those things, and they really didn't form the navy until 1798 under Adams. Why is that? Because Washington didn't care about a navy. Why did Washington not care about a navy? Because he was an army man. So the focus for Washington was all making sure that if we got attacked, he didn't care about putting up a strategic force to keep us from getting attacked. He just wanted to go to blows, because that's what an army man wants to do. Isn't that right, Sean?
Yes, sir.
That's right. Let's go. Let's get in the fight. And so, you know, why have this navy stop us from getting in the fight? You know, that's where we get our glory. Anyway. So, folks, let's stick with these founding documents and let's identify clearly what, you know, what was going on. Here's Rhode Island's ratification. Now, I do know that there were pressures. There were commercial pressures being placed on Rhode Island because plenty of the states were basically getting, and I see nothing in Congress for deliberately going after or trying to be oppressive with Rhode Island. I think it was the rancor was coming from the state legislatures, that they didn't like the fact that we got this one state on the very edge, an eastern edge of the United States, Rhode Island, that they just didn't like. They saw it was a toehold for anybody. And so what really was, I think, the impetus and driver behind Rhode Island joining wasn't necessarily the fact that their government was a bunch of loons. There were more people that had affluence that said, you know what, we need to have and be a part of this civil society, and we're going to have to surrender, you know, this level of sovereignty that has been in Rhode Island to the point of lunacy. They didn't want to see any of these amendments. The whole point of the fact that they had to ratify a new constitution was because of them. And so I think that there was a few people that put their foot down and said, enough. You guys are, you know, so expletive liberal that, you know, we're done. We're either going to vote you out and put new people in, or you're going to move forward and ratify and become a part of the union. And they became a part of the union. I don't think that there was really that big of a revolution. I think there was just enough emphasis to say, what do we have to do? Do we have to pick you up and carry you out and replace you with other people? What do we need to do here? And it got done. Okay, so as this is what they basically sent out, and then in that there are certain natural rights. So this is the beginning of their amendments, and it starts off with this first. So this is the first amendment that they were throwing out. As a matter of fact, actually, with the delegates of the people of the state of Rhode Island, Providence Plantations, duly elected and met in convention, having maturely considered the Constitution for the United States of America, agreed on the 17th day of September, in the year 1787, by the convention then assembled at Philadelphia, in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, a copy whereof proceeds those presents, and having also seriously deliberated, considered the present situation of this state, do declare and make known. Boom. And so what we're reading here are the declarations, kind of. Not maybe necessarily amendments, but go ahead and read the first declaration, Tammy, if you would, please. Thank you.
And that there are certain natural rights of which men, when they form a social compact, cannot deprive or divest their posterity, among which the enjoyment of life and liberty, with the means of acquiring, possessing and protecting property, and pursuing and obtaining happiness and safety.
Kind of an echoing of the Declaration of Independence. And so the next one, Sean.
Second, that all power is naturally vested in and consequently derived from the people. That magistrates, therefore, are their trustees and agents, and at all times amenable to them.
Right. Okay. So as you kind of see, this is kind of like a real, I'll call it, their position on their rights and so forth. You got to look at it this way, too. Rhode Island is coming in this begrudgingly, and so they want to make their documentation look like they're real lovers of liberty instead of the producers of chaos that they've been. And so they create all of these declarations, and then as we go down further, we'll actually hit the 18th, and then under these impressions, these declarations and so forth, and having considered the Constitution for ratification, we do ratify, but we also ask for these following amendments. And this is where we'll find their amendments, actually down on page 4, which is first, boom. And so, Tammy, we don't have enough time to go through all of these, or even probably start off with the first one. So in our next episode, folks, we'll actually start off with the amendments that Rhode Island recommended. And this is the last debate, by the way, of the small debates that provided amendments. So once we're done with this, I'll kind of expose in the next show what we're going to really expose in the next show. This is kind of like highlights at 11, right, to get you to tune back in to the next show, because we're going to expose the shenanigans and the subversive ways of Hamilton, what he did in the New York ratification debates, and more importantly, how he undermined everything of our government and everything in the Federalist Papers, and how this moved forward. Hamilton had concocted a plan, and he was able to execute a plan, which is why we're in the situation we're in. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.